We're reading tonight from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhyalila, Volume 4.
For the sake of our guests, this is the
graduate study
to even Srimad Bhagavatam. Bhagavatam is a graduate study to Bhagavad Gita. And then after Srimad Bhagavatam is Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. So, all of our guests can look forward to progressing in this way. And all your life you can read these texts over and over again, and you'll find newer and newer realizations of the spiritual world. Of course, first of all, we'd like to welcome our guests. And we're very fortunate to have a special guest. Yes, your mother is here. The mother of Bhagavad Gopal. How kind of you to come. Yes. You came all the way up from London? That's very nice. So we hope we've been helping to take nice care of your son.
We're very grateful. It's a lovely temple. In fact, it reminds me of my very first temple.
We try to make it like that. We try to make it like that, yes. It's not really a temple here. This is, the ladies are the managers here. It's their place. So it's sometimes they allow us to come over for kirtan in here, in Liverpool.
Yeah, interesting. I think I need 1 in 10 as a student, and they're a little wild, but I've always been really happy, so you've helped them a lot.
So, I guess if the fruit is good, the tree must be good.
Yes. So you do get a very old-fashioned feeling here. It's really amazing, because I've been doing this for many, many years. You can feel it. It's an extremely sweet, sweet place.
Hear that, Charming? We try to make it like that. The Second Avenue feeling.
The brother's been telling me about the different programs you do, and I'm really, really interested in that, because I think that's the way forward.
So. Yes. And we give the ladies have their kingdom here.
It's like a multitask or something.
Oh, yes, yes. They're all very expert. We try to stay away, out of the way of their multitasking, but they're all very expert. The men have their own place about 15 minutes away.
So do the ladies live in the house next door?
No, they live here.
They live in this temple?
Yes.
And the program's all happening here?
For the ladies, and then a few times, until we get our center in the city, we have programs here, but the idea is to get a center in the city for reaching out to the people.
It's a great city for temples,
You used to live here?
No, but I mean, Manchester is a huge city, and I think it's been ignored and neglected.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really nice that we're
So glad that you like it. Okay. Jai Jai Sri Chaitanya Jai Nityananda.
Jai Jai Sri Chaitanya Jai Nityananda.
Jai Advaita Chandra Jai Gaura
Bhaktavinoda.
Jai Jai Sri Chaitanya Jai Nityananda. Jaya Jaya Chandra Jai Go Bhaktavinda.
Jai
Jai Sri Chaitanya Jai Nityananda.
Jai Jai Sri Chaitanya Jai Nityananda.
Jaya Jaya Chandra Jai Go. from Majjalila chapter 17. The Lord travels to Vrindavan. And on his way to Vrindavan, Lord Chaitanya is stopping in Varanasi, which was a capital city of impersonalist Mayavadis, those who have concocted that the Supreme Absolute Truth has no personality or individuality. Even though he had not made such a plan, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu remained for 10 days at Varanasi, being obligated by the requests of his two servants. You see, this is the nature of bhakti, that even the Supreme Personality of Godhead feels obligated by the requests of his dear devotees. In fact, although Krishna is independent and the Supreme Controller, he enjoys voluntarily placing himself at the behest of his dear devotees. This is an amazing quality of the Supreme Lord, that he relishes becoming the servant of his devotees. As we've explained so many times, the devotee is constantly seeking how to increase his service to the Lord. But we may not realize that the Lord is constantly endeavoring to increase his service to the devotee. So in this way, there's an eternal competition. The Lord sees that the devotee is trying so hard to please him. So the Lord then reciprocates by doing something for the devotee. And in this way, the competition goes on and on and on eternally. That is life on the spiritual platform. The more we hear about this special quality of the Supreme Lord, the less we'll be fearful about engaging in devotional service. People fear about entering into any kind of activity because they think they'll be shortchanged. It's like you're thinking, if I go to university, will I get what I'm supposed to get? Will I get a good education? Will I have a good social life there? Will it get me the job I want? Everyone always calculates, if I enter into this relationship, will I get what I'm supposed to get? If I marry this person, will they put it on the line for me and give me all of the fulfillment I want? Always, with your life, you have to calculate. You have to watch carefully to make sure you're not being shortchanged. So we bring that suspicion into devotional service. Alright, okay. Yeah, I've been burned out in the material world. That's true. And yeah, I'm thinking about doing a little Krishna consciousness. But just let me keep my eyes open. Watch that Krishna. I don't want to be caught doing too much for Krishna. Giving too much of myself. You have to be careful. This is our suspicious attitude born of birth after birth in the material world. Birth after birth in the material world means shortchanged and cheated birth after birth. Material life means attachment. And as soon as there's material attachment, you must be shortchanged. There is no such thing as a successful material attachment. Never happened and never will happen. As soon as there's material attachment, there must be disappointment. That's just the way the world is constructed. You can scratch your head and wonder about it and get perplexed, but that's just the way it is. So, because we suffered birth after birth of being shortchanged, we get a little suspicious about Krishna. And therefore we don't want to freely put our hearts into devotional service because our hearts are hurt and battered. We come to Krishna looking for relief. We're materially exhausted. But still, we're not sure, should we positively hand over our hearts to devotional service? So we always keep our eyes open in case Krishna makes a false move. In the back of our minds is a worry. Will I be shortchanged? I told you about one pop song when I was a little kid. I guess it came out in the 60s. You might remember it. When you give more than you get, you're in danger. You may find that you're in love with a stranger. When you find out that you're losing, it's time to get on moving. There's danger, heartbreak dead ahead. You remember that one?
No.
When there's nothing more to be gained, don't keep holding on in vain. There's danger, heartbreak dead ahead. Start packing up your heart. So that's our attitude when we approach Krishna, often fear, suspicion. Out of resignation, we can come to devotional service. I try my best to enjoy and be the Lord in the material world. I fail. All right. I guess I'll have to be Krishna conscious. But watch it, Krishna. Don't try to take too much from me. But the more we hear about Krishna, the more the suspicion goes away. The more we chant the holy name of Krishna, the more this paranoia dissipates. And Lord Chaitanya, who is Krishna himself, in the guise of his own devotee, is the most expert at splashing and diving and swimming in the ocean of love of Krishna. Lord Chaitanya is Krishna himself teaching you how to be a devotee. To be a devotee means to get over your suspicion of rendering service to the Supreme Lord. Now, of course, it's not that people aren't suspicious about serving in the material world. Unless you're a naive fool, you're always suspicious about the material world. But out of lack of anything better to do, lack of knowing any alternative, you resign yourself to endeavoring in the material world and being suspicious. You have no idea there's a plane of activity upon which you can drop your material suspicion and freely absorb your senses in the service of the master of the senses. So Krishna, when he sees you reach a level where he can trust you, he likes to feel obligated to you, his devotee. You know yourself as tiny parts and parcels of Krishna. It's fun to feel obligated to someone. That's why everybody likes relationships. You can see, it's not simply that people like to be in command in relationships. Well, they try to enjoy that. Now you should do this, you should do that. Just like sometimes when you're on the Sankirtan, distributing Prabhupada's books in the city, you can see couples and they're walking on the street, window shopping, and you can see sometimes the woman will, "Hon, come here, look at this. Don't you think, I think that's just what we need for our home." And the guy, yeah. So she's enjoying controlling, but he's actually enjoying submitting.
Yeah, whatever you say.
So my point is, it's not that people simply enjoy commanding and controlling. People actually like to come under the control of their temporary beloved. There's a flavor to that. And vice versa also too. The ladies, they don't simply command. They like, they enjoy coming under the control of the man briefly. And vice versa. So where's the origin of all these sentiments? That is the point. Krishna both controls and he comes under the control. Therefore, as parts of Krishna, we have those same tendencies. Krishna is Om Purnam, the complete absolute truth. Therefore, all the possibilities are in Krishna, not simply control, but also coming under the control of his dear devotees. That is the mystery of the that we celebrate in the month of Kartik, the Damodar Leela. Lord Krishna, Bal Gopal, becomes bound, not exactly by the rope of Mother Yashoda, but by what? Who knows? Bhakti Padham, by the bhakti, the love of Mother Yashoda. That's the mystery of Damodar Leela. So please try to understand this. And it'll be easier for you to understand the more you render emotional service. Through devotional service, you enter into the mysteries of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And by your engagement in devotional service, Krishna trusts you. And then he delights in coming under your control. Just like Arjuna did in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita. Yes, you have read the beginning. How did Arjuna show this quality in relationship with Krishna in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita?
He's always kind of so devotional to Krishna. He's always his best friend. He's never envious.
But specifically, in the first chapter, what did Arjuna say to Krishna? It showed that even though Krishna is supreme, he was becoming obligated to his devotee.
That's a piece of advice.
Now, think carefully. What did Arjuna say?
James, you remember.
Senaya ubayo madje ratam stakpaya mechchuta. Oh, Achyuta, infallible one, please drive the chariot in between the two armies so that I can see whose desires are fighting. He's telling that to Achyuta, the Supreme Lord, infallible one. He's giving orders. The Lord is driving his chariot. And Arjuna's commanding, drive here, drive there. So let us remember this amazing quality of Krishna. In Sanskrit, it's called Vrijavasyata. The Lord coming under the control of his servant. And the more you hear about Krishna, the more you'll trust Krishna. Isn't it so, even in ordinary life? If someone's always telling you about themselves, you'll start to trust them. In a relationship, if someone's just always telling you, this is what I mean, this is how I feel, this is how I do things, this is what I expect, you'll start to trust that person. Yes, wouldn't you?
Yes.
So they don't say anything, then you get suspicious, right? What's this guy doing? But they're always explaining. You see, what I really feel is this, and my real program of activities is that. Okay, I understand. I hear you. But this is what Krishna's always doing. He's the best one in a relationship. How many births does it take for us to realize that? That Krishna is the best person for relationships. All right. So, being obligated by the requests of his two servants, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu remained for 10 days at Varanasi. At Varanasi, there was a Maharashtrian Brahmana who used to come daily to see Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. This Brahmana was simply astonished to see the Lord's personal beauty and ecstatic love for Krishna. You ever been astonished to see someone's personal beauty? No. Have you ever, at University of Liverpool, you ever been astonished to see someone's beauty? But that is the nature of the Supreme Personality of God. Astonishing beauty. And because Lord Chaitanya is Krishna in the role of the devotee of Krishna, therefore the Brahmana could see Lord Chaitanya's ecstatic love for Krishna. When the Brahmanas of Varanasi would invite Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to lunch, the Lord would not accept their invitations. He would reply, "I have already been invited somewhere else." Oh, you see, Lord Chaitanya can be diplomatic. But why didn't he accept the invitations of Brahmanas of Varanasi? Who knows? Yes, impersonalist Mayavadis, offenders, those who blatantly deny that the Lord has form, personality, and individuality. Every day, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu refused their invitations because he feared associating with Mayavadi sannyasis. Mayavadi means one who thinks everything about the Supreme Personality of God is Maya. All the personal variegatedness is Maya. The name, form, qualities, pastimes of the Lord, they think it's just material. Because they speculate that. Because variety is there in the material world and it's led to suffering, therefore, the perfection should be free of variety. This is speculation. The truth is that the perfection is full of variety, but all the variety in perfection is spiritual and perfect. But the Mayavadis say, no, anytime you see personality, anytime you see individuality, anytime you see variety, it's Maya, it's an illusion. They probably call Mayavadis. They think truth is that everything is Maya. Except the nonsense they speak. So in the purport, Srila Prabhupada instructs that this example given by Lord Chaitanya must be followed in the Krishna consciousness movement. The Vaishnavas don't like to associate with Mayavadis. Certainly not to sit down and eat with them. That's a very intimate thing when you sit down and eat with somebody. There was a great Mayavadi sannyasi named Prakashananda Saraswati. He used to teach Vedanta philosophy to a great assembly of followers. So in the purport, Prabhupada explains that. Being an impersonalist, Prakashananda Saraswati used to explain the absolute truth as being without hands, legs, mouth, or eyes. In this way, he used to cheat the people by denying the personal form of the Lord. This is what you will come upon so many times these days when people are so-called interested in spirituality. Most of them are just innocently into impersonalism. They really don't know what they're talking about. But occasionally you'll meet a hardcore impersonalist who will be just so worried. Just virulent in their condemnation of anything personal in the Supreme Absolute Truth. Most people these days, they just repeat what they've heard. The oneness, it's like, beyond all personality, It's like, the lightest light in the darkest night. And it's like, whatever, no form, no shape, you know, just undefinable. Yeah, 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 that's it, that's it. As soon as you talk about it, it means you don't know it. Yeah.
Most people like that.
You heard this, yes?
I've never been in that kind of association.
Oh,
speculating.
Oh, really? You just hung around with photographers, huh? Yeah. Caught up in their artistic creation. As I said, most people you meet are innocent. Occasionally you'll meet a ferocious person who just is adamant. Anything with personality and individuality has to be material. And come on, man, get beyond that stuff. In the neophyte stage of spiritual life, you need to focus on the personality of Godhead. But once you rise above this stuff, you know, then you're into the pure oneness. I talk like that. So, those kind of persons, devotees of Krishna, do not associate. It's easy to understand when you accept that the ultimate reality is personal. It's like if you walked in a room and people there were, you know, just talking about your mother in a derogatory way, would you stay there? No, she's got no form, she's got no head, she's got no personality. Would you stay here?
Probably not.
Why not?
Because it's not. You just get angry.
Yes, yeah. It's you react personally. Similarly, why would we stay around persons who blaspheme the Supreme Absolute Truth in this way? No form, no personality, no individuality. How would you like someone to do that to you? Just completely ignore your personal characteristics. No, you want to be recognized for your personal characteristics and qualities. So, therefore, devotees don't associate with virulent impersonalists. But most people, they just don't know what they're talking about. They just repeat something they read in a New Age magazine. Or something you've heard from some Chinese philosophy or something. Those who say don't know. Those who know don't say. And as soon as you try to explain something about the Absolute Truth, they say, oh, but you can't describe the Absolute Truth really, so you must not know what you're saying, or it can't be true what you're saying, because, you know, Supreme is just beyond all words. In one sense, that's true. The Supreme is beyond all words. But if the Supreme himself speaks words about himself, why should you not take it? In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna himself is giving words about himself. So you can't say to Krishna, the Supreme Absolute Truth, no, you're beyond words. If the words are coming directly from the Supreme Lord, then you take. How would you like it, even as your tiny self, if you were explaining yourself to someone and they just, you know, no, you can't speak. No. Words have no value. And you are trying to explain yourself. How you are, what you like, what you want. No, you're beyond words. Very frustrating. That's why Krishna makes his points in Bhagavad Gita. Avajananti mamuta. Fools think that when I come to the material world, I'm an ordinary person. Fools think like that. How can you blame Krishna for speaking out like this? He gives knowledge and people tell, no, but you can't speak. You have no face, you have no mouth. You're beyond words. But here is Krishna speaking. Tiny little you has a face and has a mouth, and you speak words. But the Supreme Absolute Truth has no face, no mouth, cannot speak words. This is just a convenient way not to listen. You can imagine. A nightmare. You woke up one day and you just started talking to people like you did every day, and there was some kind of conspiracy in which everybody pretended that you weren't speaking, even though you were speaking. Can you imagine how frustrated you'd be? Just like you did every day, you just start talking, and everybody would just look at you like you're not speaking. After a couple of days, then you probably go crazy. Sure, there have been movies made like that. One day you wake up in another dimension and you speak to everyone, but no one can notice that you're speaking. It would be highly frustrating, to say the least. But this is what people try to do to Krishna. He's giving the greatest knowledge. He's speaking in Bhagavad Gita. That's why the Sanskrit is there. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, the Supreme Opulent One, speaks. But even the so-called most intelligent university professors have a hard time understanding that just Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, Supreme Opulent One, speaks. And why do they have a hard time? Why do people have a hard time just accepting what Krishna says? Envy. They don't want to hear it. Have you ever been at a party or a gathering or something, and everyone's busy babbling away, and as soon as you start to talk about yourself, people don't pay attention, they just keep talking. Does that happen to you? How does it feel? You feel really bad, don't you? Everyone's just bubbling away and they got their glasses of bubbly.
Yeah, I just got a great job, or everything better. I met a great guy, or
she's really nice, and we're going to go traveling together. And everyone's just babbling. You know what they do? At parties, just stand around holding cups. Yeah, that what it is? And then you try to chime in. Yeah. Hey, guess what I'm going to do? But no one pays attention for some reason. And we say, well, maybe let me try another way. Guess what I did yesterday? Or something like that. But still, no one's paying attention. Just talking on and on about themselves. It happens, yeah? Yeah? Well, what do you think? Not cool or something. What did you think? Sour grapes, huh? Aesop's fable about sour grapes. The fox saw some juicy grapes hanging from a vine, and the fox jumps once, misses, twice, misses, three times, misses. And the fox just concludes, they were sour anyway. So it's really an uncomfortable feeling when you're trying to express yourself and no one's listening to you. Never happened to you? You always, huh? Yeah. So, we're part and parcel of Krishna. Krishna also has feelings. But his feelings are perfect. So in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna talks about this. Those who are unintelligent think that first I was impersonal, then I became personal. Unintelligent persons who don't know me, they say like this. Read Bhagavad Gita and see how Krishna is asserting his personal existence. Talking about those who refuse to accept his personal existence. All right, you might say, okay, so what if we don't accept Krishna's personal existence? So what? But what does Krishna say about that in the 9th chapter, 2nd verse? Apraprayamam navartante mrityu samsara part. Mm. Not getting Krishna, what do you get? Repeated birth and death. That is your reward for not getting Krishna. Apapyamantanavartante. Krishna says, they don't get me, but they do get something. Mithu samsara bhartmani. Repeated birth and death. So, this leader of Mayavadis in Varanasi, Prakashananda Saraswati, through his teachings, his only business was to sever the limbs of the Lord. Yes, there is formless, without personality, without differentiation, without variety. Although the Lord has form, Prakashananda Saraswati attempts to cut off the hands and legs of the Lord. This is the business of demons. The Vedas state that people who do not accept the Lord's form are rascals. So, in Bhagavad Gita, you know the Lord says, Vedaishta sarvar aham meva veja. By all the Vedas, I am to be known. That's Krishna asserting his personal existence. Please understand that. When Krishna says, I am, he means I, the person. What else did you mean by I? Have you ever heard an impersonal say I? A mom to me? How can that be impersonal? I am to me. But the impersonalists, speculators, they try to say, this I refers to everyone. And the mom to me refers to everyone. It's like, suppose Nanda Gopa says, I'm hungry. So, if we were good speculators, we'd say, oh, everyone here is hungry. Did you hear that? Or if he says, give me the mridanga, then we would give everyone a mridanga. That's impersonalism. It's complete speculation. Or if Bhagavad says, that's my mother, and everyone would say, hi, Mom. I am he and we are she and all this kind of stuff. This is pop impersonalism. But in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna said, Vedaishta sarvai am eva veja. By all the Vedas, I, Bhagavan Sri Krishna, certainly am to be known. Puts eva there for emphasis. Certainly. Certainly I'm a person. Certainly I am to be known through the Vedas. But speculators don't accept that. They want to push the personality of Godhead out of Bhagavad Gita. And that's a very difficult job. In fact, it's impossible. That's why Srila Prabhupada put out Bhagavad Gita as it is. Because there were so many so-called versions of Bhagavad Gita which tried to obliterate Krishna. It's like you're making your art photography for galleries and exhibitions. Suppose someone just came along and tried to like take all your portfolio and then just get rid of you. Take your name off of, you know, and just forget about you. And they put your paintings, your photographs up in the gallery and just say, this came out of the universal oneness. How would you feel?
It would be very nice, would it?
Huh?
It wouldn't be very nice.
No. You, I did this. This is my personal expression. But when Krishna asserts himself, what do people say? Who knows? Sectarian. Just like if we get your photographic artwork and now look at this. This is by Hitesh. Everyone, ooh, sectarian. It's by everyone and everything and whatever. So that's what people do when we say Krishna. Sometimes they get disturbed. Wait a minute. That's dogmatic. That's sectarian. What can we do? And Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Vedaishta Sarvam Aham Eva Veda. By all the Vedas, I certainly am to be known. So Srila Prabhupada writes, indeed, the Mayavadi demons try to cut this form of the Lord, which delivers all fallen souls, to pieces. A brahmana who saw the wonderful behavior of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to Prakashananda Saraswati and described the Lord's characteristics. Now please listen to the brahmana's descriptions of Lord Chaitanya. The brahmana told Prakashananda Saraswati, there is a sannyasi who has come from Jagannath Puri, and I cannot describe his wonderful influence and glories. Everything is wonderful about that sannyasi. He has a very well-built and luxuriant body, and his complexion is like purified gold. He has arms that extend to his knees, and his eyes are like the petals of a lotus. You're visualizing all that now? Very well-built, luxuriant body, complexion like purified gold, arms that extend to the knees, eyes like the petals of a lotus. In his person are all the transcendental symptoms of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When one sees all these features, one takes him to be Narayan himself. Whoever sees him immediately begins to chant the holy name of Krishna. We have heard about the symptoms of a first-class devotee in Srimad Bhagavatam. And all those symptoms are manifest in the body of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. In other words, the Brahmana was noting he's got the characteristics of the Supreme Lord, and he also has the characteristics of a Mahabhagavat, topmost devotee of the Lord. That seems contradictory, doesn't it? But remember, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Krishna coming in the role of his own devotee. So the Brahmana was right to see both ways. He's got the characteristics of the Supreme Lord, and he's got the characteristics of the highest devotee of the Lord. So what were the symptoms of his being a Mahabhagavat? You already heard the symptoms of his being the Supreme Lord. But the symptoms that he was the topmost devotee, as described in Srimad Bhagavatam, these will now be described by the Brahmana. His tongue is always chanting the holy name of Krishna, and from his eyes, tears incessantly fall like the flowing Ganges. Sometimes he dances, laughs, sings, and cries, and sometimes he roars like a lion. His name, Krishna Chaitanya, is all auspicious for the world. Everything about him, his name, form, and qualities, is unparalleled. Simply by seeing him, one understands that he possesses all the characteristics of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Such characteristics are certainly uncommon. Who will believe it? Now it's time for Prakashananda Saraswati to reply. What is his first response? Can you believe it? After such a beautiful description by the Brahmana of the qualities of Lord Chaitanya as the Supreme Lord and as the greatest devotee, the first reaction from Prakashananda Saraswati, the leader of the Mayavadi sannyasis, that says, get real. Has that ever happened to you? You've seriously said something to someone, real big build up and a real big, you know, this. And then you waited for their response. They just looked at you and, ever happened? Prakashananda Saraswati laughed very much to hear this description. Joking and laughing at the Brahmana, he began to speak as follows. He said, "Yes, I've heard about him. He is a sannyasi from Bengal, and he is very sentimental. I've also heard that he belongs to the Bharati Sampradaya, for he is a disciple of Keshava Bharati. However, he's only a pretender." In one sense, yes, Lord Chaitanya is very sentimental in that he's always in the bhava stage, the platform of highest devotional sentiments. Of course, Prakashananda Saraswati is saying he's very sentimental in a derogatory way. But actually, Lord Chaitanya is the perfection of being sentimental, in that all the perfection of devotional sentiments are there in him. He's the abode of all perfect devotional emotions. So, Prakashananda Saraswati thought, these are just the symptoms of a pretender. Because he's a Mayavadi, he can't understand the transcendental symptoms exhibited by a devotee. Therefore, Mayavadis think, it's just some temporary emotional sentiment that's appeared. In other words, there's no such thing as pure love of Krishna. So this is offensive. This is actually atheism. When you say that everyone is God, or everything is God, you're basically saying no one is God. No one is supreme. Everything is whatever, and no one is supreme. So impersonalism, as you've heard so many times, is backdoor atheism. Instead of saying there's no God, you say everyone's God, which is just another way of saying there's no God. Prakashananda Saraswati continued, "I know that his name is Chaitanya, and he is accompanied by many sentimentalists. His followers dance with him, and he tours from country to country and village to village. Whoever sees him accepts him as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, since he has some mystic power by which he hypnotizes people. Everyone who sees him becomes illusioned." And then he gives examples. What about Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya? He was the greatest scholar amongst us. But I have heard that he's also become a madman due to the association with this Chaitanya. This Chaitanya is a sannyasi in name only. Actually, he is a first-class magician. In any case, his sentimentalism cannot be very much in demand here in Kashi or Varanasi, the Mayavadi capital city. So then, Prakashananda Saraswati, the leader of the impersonalists, tells the Brahmana, "Do not go to see Chaitanya. Just continue hearing Vedanta. If you associate with upstarts, you will be lost in this world and in the next." Of course, Vedanta, Veda means knowledge, Anta means end. As Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, he's the goal of the Vedas. Vedanta, the end of all knowledge, actually means to understand Krishna. But the impersonalists think their interpretations are Vedanta. Therefore, Prakashananda Saraswati is telling the Brahmana, "Don't go to see Chaitanya, just stick with us and hear Vedanta, or hear our imagination of what Vedanta is." Now, how did the Brahmana feel about hearing these words? You see, bhakti is full of emotions. So, it's not that there's no reaction from the brahmana to hear these things. No. When the brahmana heard Prakashananda Saraswati speak like this about Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he became very much grief-stricken. Chanting the holy name of Krishna, he immediately left. So, he's going to go report this to Lord Chaitanya. You see, devotees cannot tolerate hearing the Supreme Lord being described as formless, personalityless. They're very grief-stricken to hear that. Even to this day in Japan, there are groups of Indians who remember Prabhupada's visit to Japan in the early 70s. Some Indian merchants there had invited Prabhupada and the devotees to a program that they were staging. And so they also had invited some Mayavadi sannyasi, some impersonalist swami. And so, you know, the Indians, they just thought, you know, it's all dharma, it's all whatever. We put this swami and that swami on the stage and let them talk and... You know, so, Prabhupada sat on the stage with his devotees. Must have been about 10 devotees. That's all there was in Japan at the time. And then the Mayavadi was there. So the Mayavadi began to speak concocted Vedic knowledge, describing the absolute truth in a formless way. And Prabhupada couldn't take it any longer. And right in the middle of the Mayavadi Swami's talk, you know, with the audience of wealthy Indian guests, while the Mayavadi was speaking, Prabhupada just told the devotees, start kirtan. But right while the guy was speaking, the devotees jumped up, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna. And the Mayavadi Sannyasi was like, yeah, what's this? You know, the people were shocked too. Yeah. The Indian guests, they were, this is not what a sadhu does. A real sadhu lets everyone talk about anything, whatever. It's just all, you know, it's all Hinduism. It's all just hodgepodge. So, Prabhupada wouldn't take it. It's like, suppose you're sitting there and someone gets up and starts to talk about your beloved as having no form, no personality. You can't take it. You see, my point is, bhakti has feeling. It's the perfection of emotion. Not that you become a stone. No, you become the perfect person. So how do you expect Srila Prabhupada to sit there and hear a Mayavadi offender describe Krishna as having no form, no name, no qualities? You couldn't tolerate that for anyone dear to you. Suppose you were sitting there and then someone got up and began to describe your son as having nothing, no qualities, no form, no individuality. It just went on and on. You couldn't sit there. Wait a minute! You would stand up. It's a natural reaction. So Krishna is the supreme beloved. How do you expect the best devotee to just sit there peacefully, being a so-called sadhu, according to the material conception, yeah, while someone just blasphemes Krishna? Not possible. The Prabhupada, finally he just turned the devotees, kirtan. They just interrupted the man's speech by, you know, mudangas and kartals dancing on the stage. And all the people in the audience, they were just like, what kind of sadhu is this? And even to this day, more than 30 years later, in Japan, I've met Indians who remember this. You're Swamiji. Very unusual. Oh, they think they know the standard. The problem is unusual. Yeah. They think, you know, all the other sadhus, all the other Swamijis, they just, you know, whatever, you know, they just, yes, yes. But your Swamiji, he's very strong. He's spoken out very strongly. So even now, 32 years later, they still remember. So this is why devotees have a hard time just sitting there when people start complaining. Anytime you say Krishna, you must be sectarian. Anytime you mention anything specific about the Supreme Absolute Truth, and you must not know, or you must be a sectarian religionist, one of those who's causing all the trouble in the world today. But if you just describe the Supreme Absolute Truth in a generic way, you know, the force that's everywhere, and everyone likes them. Yes, yes, very strange. The power that be, the binding agent that binds everyone and everything. Then, Krishna. As soon as you say Krishna, you'll see some division. Some people, they're attracted. Others, it always happens. So you have to expect that. It's the way it is. In this material world, some people are moving toward Krishna and some people are moving away from Krishna. Remember the guy Tuesday night? Now, I'm going to say something to you that's going to sound like a challenge, but it's not a challenge. I just have a question. And it's going to sound like, you know, a bit intimidating, but don't take it that way. It'll always be like that. You have to get used to it. That's why Krishna says what he says in Bhagavad Gita. Abhijananti mamudha, the fools, they don't take my word for what it is. I come to this world in my spiritual glory and they think I'm an ordinary person. Now, of course, you don't have to antagonize people, you know, in terms of jumping down their throats. But at the same time, you should not be shy about tactfully presenting the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Yes, you can start talking about the Supreme Source of everything, the source of all energy, like that, Supreme Absolute Truth. But then, don't feel shy to start saying Krishna. And you should know what's going to happen as soon as you start saying Krishna. Some people are going to be for and some people are going to be against. Some people are going to say, hey, I was with you up to this point, but as soon as you started saying Krishna, then I knew you were sectarian. And other people are going to be like, interested. Sounds interesting. Tell me about Krishna. That's the way it's going to be. So we have to know how to tastefully present the science of Krishna without being intimidated. It's not that we're, you know, like fundamentalist Bible bashers. No. But at the same time, We are sensitive to Krishna. Why should you become so sensitive to everybody else and insensitive to Krishna? Like suppose someone asked you, tell us about your mother. You say, you mean that woman? No, no, you know, your mother. You mean the woman? Your mother. Can you describe her? The woman that from whose body I came from. And why wouldn't you say anything specific about your mother? Well, I don't want to, you know, be. I don't want to, like, you know. Hurt anyone's feelings by saying anything specific, you know. If I just say that woman, everyone can relate to that, you see. I don't have to go any further. It's like generic. Everyone can kind of, oh, that woman, yeah. But if I start describing her personally and specifically, you know, some people may be into it and some people may not. So therefore, I just say, that woman, yeah, you want to know about my mother? That woman, yeah. Devotees shouldn't be afraid to talk about Krishna. You should just learn how to tactfully present the science of Bhagavad Dharma. And if you're going to preach, you're going to have to learn how to deal with pop impersonalists. You won't meet a hardcore impersonalist that often. You will sometime, but not that often. Most people are just innocent and they just babble something they read in a New Age magazine. The less dogma that you have pushing down on your shoulders, the easier it is for you to rise upward on your spiritual path. You've heard things like that? Yeah, this is normal blah blah these days. Yeah, you don't have to intimidate people. I remember one of my godbrothers back in the 70s, someone came to the Sunday feast and they were kind of like a pop impersonalists. You know, they just read some books and they were, the supreme is formless, the supreme is shapeless. And, the person was a bit stuck on that. And so, I remember, the way it was back then, the devotees just got out the Gita. So they got out the first Abhajananti Mahamudha. What does Krishna say here? Mudha. He said, Mudha. Buddha. You don't have to do that. I remember the little guy about this. He was telling me about he was doing a preaching engagement at Yale University. And I think I'd already graduated by that time. So, In the Hinduism class that I tried to take, but I dropped it after one morning. So they were making a presentation about Bhagavad Gita, and like that. And so, of course, at Yale they're dealing with the training of the so-called intelligentsia. So that means arrogant. Most of us seem to be arrogant. So they were lecturing, Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Bhagavan, Krishna, Supreme Personality of Godhead. And one student kept interrupting, No, it's not to Krishna. It is to the everything. And throughout the whole lecture, the student kept interrupting. This is at Yale, like the pinnacle of academic attainment. So the student... So there was one Maharaj there, and he had like his brahmachari assistant. And one brahmachari assistant, he was really big. He used to play, like American football at the university. So he's a real big guy. And so the sannyasi goes, and so Bhagavan Krishna is the Supreme Person. And again, the student interrupted, not to Krishna. And finally, the sannyasi just turned to his Brahmachari, big assistant, get him! Brahmachari comes running down the aisle. So, you can't do that. At the same time, you have to figure out a way how to cope with the situation in which you don't allow Krishna to be, you know, so to speak, torn to shreds. Just like you protect your beloved. And somehow on a Tuesday I figured out, by Krishna's grace, how to deal with it to such an extent that the guy finally came before me and kind of humbly excused himself and then left. I walked out the door. Isn't that amazing? I was astonished myself. It's kind of, you know, kind of said, I'm sorry, you know, kind of, and just kind of left, you know. he was trying to rally, you know, the whole room on his side. Now, how many of you here think he answered the question? You know, one of those types, you know. I want to ask you a question. And I just want you to answer yes or no. Now, not being challenging. I just want to ask you a question, and I want you to answer yes or no. Yeah, typical wise guy question. Yeah. Have you ever considered that there might be any other spiritual paths in the world that are right? And I just want you to answer yes or no. Oh, of course I didn't answer. I forgot what I said, but anyway, I didn't answer yes or no. I just stayed out of his trap. I stayed out of the box. And then he didn't like that, so he turned to me. Now, how many here think he answered the question? So he's one of those type of guys. So some other things backfired on him, and he even asked him, you know, at the end he was pleading, can I give you my email? If I write to you, will you answer? And I kind of said, I told the son, you can give him your email address. Yeah, give it to him. He was at the end, he was kind of like, you know, if I have some more questions, you know, can I write you? So it's not easy dealing with such persons. You have to deal with two realities at the same time. You don't want to unnecessarily blow somebody out. At the same time, you're not going to just stand there while someone rakes Krishna over the coals. You say you have to deal with both realities. If people feel that you care, then you can do a lot of things if they feel you care. Because Prabhupada had such compassion, he was able to